Across America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. In about 1 hour from now, we're going to be joined by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars, and we're going to be talking about Cardinal B and the Jews. What did happen during the time of Vatican II? Who were the secret forces involved in it? And what does it mean for you and for me, Roman Catholic and non-Roman Catholic alike? Dr. E. Michael Jones has a Ph.D. from Temple University in Philadelphia. And his Culture Wars magazine, which is something I'm just now getting into, is really quite a resource. I would recommend it to you. I'm sure that when he's on in about an hour from now, we'll have a chance to discuss that more completely. But back to my conversation with Steve from Tennessee. Steve, there's a book of chronological and background charts of the Old Testament. It's a Zondervan publication. Unfortunately, Zondervan is owned by Rupert Murdoch of News Corp fame, but that's as it is. Can't do anything about it. And Dr. John H. Walton is a professor of Old Testament at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, which takes a position on the 70th week of Daniel that is not the one that you and I are talking about here, the one that we believe in, but at any rate, be that as it may, Dr. Walton's book of charts on page 106, there's a big chart that says views concerning Daniel's 70 weeks. And the chart is really excellent in that it does lay out the varying positions of interpretation on this this chapter, which is so pivotal, even if one does not believe any of it, or any of the schools of interpretation that surround it. Understanding Daniel chapter 9 historically, even if one is not a believer in Jesus Christ, understanding this chapter historically and understanding the schools of interpretation that surround it historically is pivotal to having an inside track on this current Middle East debate in regard to the Zionist state of Israel and its legitimacy or its lack of legitimacy. And, Steve, as you point out, the position that you would take, that I think Dr. Oswald T. Alice would take, and that I would support, which sees the 70th week, or that last 7 years, is being part of a continuation. In other words, from the beginning of the prophecy to the end of it, we're talking about 490 years. And if we date the beginning of that prophecy in terms of the decree of the Persian king Artaxerxes to Nehemiah, and follow that all the way through to the conclusion of the 490-year time frame, we come right up to the dates that you've given us and the interpretation that you've given us. Dr. Walton lays that out for us in his chart, entitles that particular school of interpretation the so-called Roman view. The eschatological view, the futuristic view of that chapter, has a couple of different schools within it, this can get very complicated, but to keep it simple, most of the current people that I hear who talk about the 70th week of Daniel, or what they say are the last 7 years of world history, believe in this parenthesis or gap theory of 2,000-plus years. They believe that the 7 years are future, not past. And as you correctly point out, Steve, if you take that position, the individual that you and I believe is referenced by Jesus Christ in verses 26 and 27 becomes, in most of those views, the Antichrist. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We'll have a longer period of time for conversation when I return, and then I want to take an additional caller. Stay tuned.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We want to greet our new affiliate, WMQM AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee. That is a 50,000-watt station that is now involved with both Mark Dancos, America, and the Republic Broadcasting Network. Also, to alert you to the fact that Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars will be on this morning a little bit after 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. To talk about this whole business of Cardinal B and the Jews. What really happened at Vatican II? Who was behind it? What are the implications? We'll discuss that with Dr. Jones with reference to his own cover story work, an essay that is on the July-August 2006 edition of Culture Wars. Back with Steve at Tennessee just for another minute or two, and then I'll take another caller. Steve, this whole business of the 70 weeks of Daniel, I think you've identified the issue. Is it past in fulfillment or future? Is this parenthesis theory of 2,000 years between the 69th and 70th weeks, is that a false or true theory? And what one believes about the reference point and who this person is that's talked about in the 26th and 27th verses, is that Jesus Christ or is it the Antichrist? That's another view that comes up. And this also pertains, of course, to the whole issue of the Zionist state of Israel in terms of whether or not people are against it or for it. But go ahead.
Well, one of the interesting little quotes, get in the Talmud. I don't have the page and number and everything, but it's in there, and I do have it. I didn't come prepared. I just grabbed the phone.
You're doing fine.
But anyway, the thing is that there's a rabbinical curse in there against anybody who numbers the 70 weeks of Daniel. Now, why would a Talmud-believing person have a curse against anybody that delves into the book of Daniel?
Well, you know, that's interesting. Because, I was not aware of that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, it is fascinating, you know, and I love it because the study of the Bible is so powerful, you know. And when you ask for the Holy Spirit to reveal things to you, I mean, it's like nothing in this world. But anyway, to get back to the thing, and also futurism comes when we follow it back far. You know, you name a few there, you know, Darby and the crew, Westcott and Hort. I mean, we go all the way back. But it goes right back to Francisco Ribera, a Spanish Jesuit priest.
My academic paper makes reference to this Jesuit priest, by the way. If you get into, yes, but go ahead.
Okay. And then, but now that's futurism. See, they had to stop the Reformation. You know, and the Jesuits, the Loyola brothers, you know, are the ones who are to stop the Reformation and doing a very good job of it, except they will not win. But anyway, there was the Alcazar, another Spanish priest, who came up with the preterist, where the Antichrist was in the past. And if you go to Revelation 17, 1 to 6, I have a dictionary. You know, in my, you know, it's a New World Dictionary of the American Language, College Edition. This is the Webster's, you know. And you go to Scarlet Woman, this is the Roman Catholic Church. I've got you mentioned Moody, a Moody Bible Institute, the Wycliffe Bible Commentary by Moody. And you go back to Revelation 17, 1 to 6, and it's powerful because our forefathers, Wycliffe, Luther, Calvin, John Knox, Huss, the Wesley brothers, you name it in there, all our forefathers knew that the Roman Catholic Church was the seat of the Antichrist and that the Pope was the Antichrist. And this is just, I mean, the Anabaptists knew this, the Waldenses, who they massacred, the Huguenots. I mean, all these people knew, and they wrote in their writings, that the Pope was the Antichrist. And he's the one that's trying to cover up all this stuff. And it's like an octopus. There's so many tentacles, you can't see the octopus. And Rome is the octopus. This is what I really appreciate about a lot of the stuff the brother just before me had to say. It's just old Protestantism. But our Protestant brothers and sisters have no idea what's around their neck. And they're falling into this ecumenical World Council on Churches, you know, bringing Christ down to the same as Buddha or Zoroaster, or, you know, just taking him right back to nothing and just a man. You know, this has been Rome's situation all the time. So there's the culprit. And it's been proven over and over. Well, I need to let you go. I appreciate you, brother. May the Lord bless your efforts to get out truth.
Hey, God bless, Steve. Take care, sir. Jim in Texas, if you're still there, I'm on. Go ahead, Jim.
Good morning, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
I'd like to take this down a notch from the religious point of view, but first of all, to say I only caught the last half of your show yesterday, and after listening to the first half hour that I did, I was very tempted to turn it off because I'm sorry to say, but your guest, that was the biggest bunch of drivel I think I've heard in practically my lifetime.
Well, he said a couple of things I would agree with, but in the main, Jim, I would affirm the fact that there were some very, very serious, glaring conflicts between this guy would say on the whole issue of Zionism and I'm sure what you or I would affirm. That much is for sure.
He wouldn't answer any questions. I won't go there, he said, no matter what any subject was brought up to him that he didn't want to talk about.
Yeah, the Ashkenazic issue and Dyer Yassin were a couple of examples of this.
Yeah, there's no such thing as an Ashkenazi, he said. It's, all Jews are the same. And more or less, that's what the man was saying.
Yes.
Now, I mean, this is flat-out denying history. It's something that's easily proven. And there's just no sense arguing or listening to a fellow like that because you're not going to get anything out of him. It's his way or the highway, more or less, so to speak. And how he achieved what notoriety he has, and I've read and seen his name in a lot of contexts, but I don't know how he ever made it, but to get back to the thing, the point that I always try to bring up, and I'm not an expert on it, but you cannot pinpoint, as far as I know, any of the Jews on which Jews are believers in the Talmud and which are not.
Yes.
They always weasel. Well, the Torah Jews, yeah, but do the Torah Jews also believe in the Talmud? You can't get anybody to answer that.
You're identifying a very key point, I think, Jim, and one that I am not an expert on either. But, you know, this whole business of the Talmud, I was looking at a chart earlier today in my personal studies related to this whole business of the rabbinic writings. And, of course, you've got the Midrash, and then you have the couple of different sections of the Babylonian Talmud known as the Mishnah and the Gemara. And then there's the Palestinian Talmud, and then there's something also known as the Tosefta. And this whole issue of trying to sort through these rabbinic writings to determine which Jews believe in which writings and how those writings in their minds relate to the Torah is a very, very key theological and historical situation that you've pinpointed here. And I have difficulty getting straight answers out of folks on this as well, because when I talk to different Jews, I hear different things from different Jews in regard to what they accept and don't accept.
It's impossible almost to get in any information out of them on it, because they slide from one position to another.
Yes.
You know, well, yeah, but he's a Torah observant Jew. Yeah, but does he also believe in the Talmud? Does he read the Talmud? Does do the rabbis preach the Talmud, so to speak? Can't get an answer. It's just a matter of saying, we'll differentiate this group of Jews, just saying that these can be nice Jews, where the other there may be not so nice. But as far as I know about the Jews, and I don't know too much about them, except that I've lived my life listening to what people say and reading, but more importantly, watch what they do. Because watching what people do is much more important than listening to what they say.
Yes, and I think,
in my opinion, it proves more what they are and what they're about than anything they say, because anybody can say anything.
Yes. Yeah, and it seems to me when you start getting into this whole thing of Jews, as you have discussed it this morning, I have a difficult time trying to categorize these different elements myself, both in terms of the what the guest yesterday was calling the Sabbateans, but for clarification, I think you and I can agree on the terminology that the Ashkenazic Jews who founded the State of Israel, largely connected with the Labor Party, were basically Eastern European and Russian Jews in origin who had a strong socialistic and communistic political orientation, and who, based upon that political orientation, do not believe in the God of the Old Testament at all, for the most part. So I think that that's one group of people. And then when you start talking about religious Jews, this gets into, as you identify, those who identify themselves as Torah Jews. Then you've got other Jews that come into the mix who are involved apparently in affirming some version of either the Babylonian or Palestinian Talmuds. It seems to me that regardless of what kind, and then of course there's another element that I forgot about, and that is the so-called Orthodox Jews who believe in the Torah, who do not affirm Zionism. I think Steve from Tennessee, the previous caller, was talking about this one as well. So you know, when you look at all of these different divisions of world Judaism, historically and presently, I think for purposes of this conversation, it's fascinating that all of those different divisions that people will talk about when they speak of Jews are all divisions, as diverse as they may be in their different points of interpretation, who do not believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God. Now, this becomes important only insofar as I'm trying to make a political and cultural point, that the Christian religious right in the United States that is pro-Zionist seems to ignore the fact that these different divisions of Judaism, with the exception of the Torah Jews who are anti-Zionist, is a pro-Zionist cabal that basically denies the fundamental core tenet of Christianity, and there's a very significant and curious alliance that's been built on that. We'll come back. Stay on the line.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Would you enjoy a career where you pick your hours, work for who you want to, when you want to, as much as you want to? No one knows about this hidden career because there is no book, school, or teaching material available. Until now. Learn the trade of window painting. Window Genie is now offering a 3-day workshop on DVD that shows you how to reproduce art, text, and graphics professionally, even if you can't draw a stick man. Secrets, cheater techniques, shortcuts, tips, and tricks are all revealed. Recoup your investment in as little as one job and have a career for life. This training also gives you the skills to do regular sign work, indoor murals, and signage. Begin your new career today. Just call us at 780-457-7109 or visit us at windowgenie.com. Again, that's Window Genie, spelled JEANNIE.com.
Back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by a caller, and we will be joined at around 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars to talk about Vatican II and Cardinal B, B-E-A, Cardinal B, and the Jews. Jim, you still there?
Yeah, still here.
You've again identified something that I think is absolutely pivotal to the elusive character of the whole question of trying to pin people down on the subject of the Jews and what kind of Jews we're talking about here, and this whole issue of Jews who have no religious inclination at all. This of course, would be the, you know, in many modern Jews, of course, and I think Dr. E. Michael Jones may talk about this morning, where you see things like Freudian psychoanalysis and Marxism becoming very much a part of the ideology of many people who claim today to be Jewish but have no connection whatsoever in their own ideology to the God of the Old Testament.
Well, and the Bolshevik Jews were a perfect example of that, the ones that led
absolutely.
The Russian Revolution, because they claimed to have no regard whatsoever for any religion, despite the fact that it's once again, it boils down to what I said before, what they say and what they do. Because what they did was slaughter the Russian Orthodox Church, killing thousands upon thousands of priests, and I don't know who all they killed. They just slaughtered them indiscriminately, burned their churches down, but they didn't destroy any synagogues.
Yes, and
so that, you know, that, to me, that tells the tale right there.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. And my guest on Friday, a guy named Dr. Robert Sungenis from the so-called Catholics Apologetics International, has a very lengthy piece that the Lutheran Christian News has been running in segments, and it's entitled Neocons and the Jewish Connection. And Dr. Sungenis gets into the whole Jewish connection to Bolshevism and the way in which the kinds of atrocities that you're talking about that were directed against a lot of people in Russia, including the Russian Orthodox Church, are chronicled by Sungenis in his work, which I've been trying to read through before Friday's interview. And it's a very sordid history, a very bloody tale historically, that for real obvious reasons is virtually never discussed. I've never seen it discussed, as a matter of fact, in any corporate media outlets anywhere in the country.
Yeah, and but the thing a lot of people don't understand is when the communists, the Bolsheviks, tried to take over Spain in 1936, they done exactly the same thing to the Roman Catholic Church, slaughtering priests and nuns, first order of business. They went after them, hammer and tong, and how the Catholic Church could have anything to do with the Jewish Bolsheviks are the same people that financed the Bolshevik Revolution and led it and still do to this day. How the Catholic Church could have any kind of cooperation with them when these people have the upper hand, they went after them with no excuse, nothing, just slaughter, indiscriminate slaughter.
This may get into some of the things I want to ask Dr. Jones about later this morning, in that when you go back to Vatican II, E. Michael Jones has a very lengthy, incredible essay in the July-August 2006 Culture Wars, where he talks about what happened with the Jews and Vatican II and the amount of Jewish lobbying that was involved in order to create a certain outcome with Vatican II that was hospitable to the modern Jewish lobby in this country and to Zionism. And this essay goes on. I read it in its entirety because I wanted to ask Dr. Jones a series of questions about the essay this morning. But it's a 23-page essay with all kinds of footnotes and documentation in it in regard to a process that would suggest that we can go back to the period of time in Dr. Jones' essay to see that there was a fundamental shift in the official positions of the Roman Catholic Church in the wake of Vatican II that caused a far different spin coming out of the Roman Catholic tradition in regard to this whole business of Zionism. I don't think there's any question about it. And that spin, in turn, I assume, would have something to do with what seems to be largely the official silence of the Roman Catholic Church now in regard to some of these historic episodes that you cite.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's back to what you and I discussed at one time before, how they've taken control of all the religions. They have complete control of Hagee and his boys up there with you in San Antone, and Falwell and Robertson, and I don't know that. I think the Lutherans and the Methodists, and as far as I know, any of them, they're all more or less controlled through the National Council of Churches, more or less controlled, where they're all, they pay their price, so to speak, to Israel and more or less worship Israel, or at the very least, do not say anything bad about them. So, you know, it's kind of like they can, except for small sects, they control it all.
Yes, and, you know, when you look at it, it has presented a very, very interesting thing that gets back to my earlier conversation this morning with Steve from Tennessee, looked at from the vantage point of Christian eschatology in the New Testament. There is constant reference made in the New Testament, folks who believe in the New Testament, as I do, will affirm this, but even for those who don't believe in the New Testament, there's a very interesting concept there about deception. When I come back, I just wanted to underscore that. Jim, if you're on the line, stay on. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420. And see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420. Or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Obviously, something serious is going on, politically, economically, geologically, and environmentally. And how you prepare for those changes will determine your well-being in the very near future. Now, whether you're preparing for your family, your business, or your country, the Survival Center has the knowledge and experience to assist you in those decisions. Survival Center is America's premier supplier of family preparedness, health, and survival supplies with over 33 years of continuous operation. Now, you can start preparing with just knowledge, and that's why the Survival Center is offering a book. It's called Basic Preparedness, and it's just $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And it'll teach you about the four basics of survival: food, water, medical, and shelter. And when you order that book, you'll also get a free Survival Center catalog. Contact us today so we can help you prepare for whatever comes your way. Call us toll-free at 1-800-321-2900 or online at www.survivalcenter.com.
Back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. A little bit after 9 o'clock this morning, we'll be joined by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars to talk about Vatican II and Cardinal B. and the Jews, and Dr. E. Michael Jones' essay for Culture Wars on this subject. It goes back to the July-August 2006 edition of that publication. A lot of stuff in this Culture Wars. The book reviews are great. The letters to the editor are really insightful. And the essays are first-rate, too. I would really recommend that you take a look at Dr. Jones' website, and we'll be discussing that a little bit later on this morning. Jim in Texas, you still there?
Yeah, still here.
Go ahead.
Can I ask you a personal question? This is just for my edification.
Sure.
I was born and raised and lived my entire life till I retired in St. Louis area. And all I ever heard about or anything I've read about Lutherans, and being you're a Lutheran, you undoubtedly have the answer to this. What's the difference in the Missouri Synod, which is all I ever heard about, like they were kind of a breakaway sect or different than the other Lutherans in the United States?
Boy, you've opened up a can of worms there, Jim.
Because all I ever heard about is the Missouri Synod done this, and they had their meetings, and they done this and said this and established this. And I was wondering, what's the difference? Why would they classify them down to the Missouri Synod?
Well, you get back into boy, there's a lot of history packed into this, and maybe for
purpose, can you encapsulate it a little bit?
Yeah, just in encapsulation. Matter of fact, the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church puts out a pamphlet entitled "What Are the Differences Between the Missouri Synod and the ELCA," which is the larger branch of American Lutheranism. But suffice it to say that this goes back to the 19th century, as far as the fact that the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church, which of course you think of in terms of St. Louis, Missouri, is nonetheless an international version of Lutheranism. It's some of the names associated with it would be people like C.F.W. Walther and J.T. Mueller and Martin Stephen and so forth. The Missouri Synod Lutheran Church started in the 19th century in this country as a German immigrant church comprised of very traditional conservative Lutherans who in many respects migrated to the United States because in the 19th century there was an attempt in Prussia to create a forcible union between the Lutheran and Reformed churches on the part of a Prussian king, and I think it was King Frederick Wilhelm II, I think was the guy's name. But at any rate, the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church that we think of today largely came out of an immigration movement out of Germany toward the United States in the 19th century. The long and the short of it is, however, to be very, very simplistic because of time and the medium that we're working with radio, the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church is distinguished from some other branches of American Lutheranism that became a part of what we know today as the ELCA, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, for a couple of reasons. The Missouri Synod historically had the German ethnic emphasis, whereas in many of the groups that comprise what we know of today as the ELCA, these are groups that had more of a Norwegian and a Scandinavian ethnic background. But then there are some very, very serious theological differences of opinion, at least as the current official positions of those two main bodies of American Lutheranism are drawn up. The Missouri Synod Lutheran Church has a much more traditional, some would argue literalistic, some would argue fundamentalistic understanding of the Old and the New Testament than characterizes the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. The Missouri Synod does not ordain women to the ministry, which the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America does. The Missouri Synod has a far more traditional position historically on issues like homosexuality and abortion than characterizes many people who belong to the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America today. The Missouri Synod does not participate in the World and National Council of Churches. The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America does. And in terms of their respective understandings of both Lutheranism and Christianity generally, the Missouri Synod has, using these terms advisedly, a more traditional Orthodox understanding of the Old and the New Testament than characterizes the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, and goes back to a more traditional form of Lutheranism before the onset of modernism and ecumenism and some of these other things that have had a greater impact, at least historically, in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. I don't know if that's helpful or not.
Oh, yeah, it pretty well explains it. They refused to be liberalized is what it boils down to.
Yeah, and they continue to fight those trends, by the way. But if you go back into history at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, Missouri, going back to the early 1970s,
that's in St. Louis County, but it's right
yes.
outside of St. Louis. Yeah.
801 Des Moines Avenue, I think it's in Clayton, Missouri, I think is technically where it is. One of the great conflicts in American church history in the 20th century took place where the more traditional conservative Missouri Synod Lutheran Church administration, run in those days by a president by the name of Jacob Preuss, P-R-E-U-S.
Yeah, I remember the name. I remember seeing the name somewhere.
Well, was involved in his administration of his synod. We were involved in a conflict with the president of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis in those days, the late John Tejan. And John Tejan and the majority of the St. Louis faculty at Concordia Seminary at that time were being charged by the administration of their synod with false doctrine for allegedly liberalizing the understanding of scripture and theology and so forth that was being taught at Concordia Seminary. The long and the short of it is that the administration of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod removed John Tejan from office as the president of Concordia Seminary. This action resulted in a walkout of the vast majority of the professors and students at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis at that time, who formed a group called Seminex, which stood for Concordia Seminary in Exile. That group had a far, I think, far more liberal, ecumenical, mainstream Protestant understanding of things than would characterize the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod historically. It is noteworthy that that Seminex institution and the people who left the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod to form something called the American Evangelical Lutheran Church, the Association of Evangelical Lutheran Churches. That church body and the Seminex educational institution were eventually assimilated into what we now know as the ELCA, the big mainline Lutheran body. So I think you can see in general outline what the theological differences between the Missouri Synod and the ELCA. And yet even within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, there was a great struggle over this issue of liberalism a generation and a half ago. And I don't think it's a done deal in the Missouri Synod. This sort of thing continues to spark.
It's still going on?
Yeah, it's still, well, you know, it's simmering, but there are some folks in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod that think that things have not yet been sufficiently clarified on some of these subjects. And at their upcoming national convention, I understand that there are going to be some things that come up that may reflect the fact that not all of these things are as settled as many of us perhaps were led to believe that they were. But that in general outline, if you just look at it somewhat simplistically for purposes of boiling things down to an essence that can be discussed quickly on the radio, is the difference between those two branches of American Lutheranism. Part of it is ethnic, historically, and then there's a great theological divide there, too. I think the Missouri Synod would say that they hearken back in their theology to the Lutheranism of the Reformation, and I believe that they would charge that the ELCA Lutheran Church has a theological point of view that's really rooted in the post-Enlightenment liberalism that was coming out of Europe from the 18th century onward. And I think they would probably also say that the ELCA is on the modernist side of the fundamentalist modernist controversy that characterized these various churches in the United States in the first third of the 20th century.
Well, that pretty well explains it. I suspected it was something along those lines, because anytime one group gets identified like that and they're against change, then they kind of become demonized by the rest of the group because they won't go along, you know. They won't go along to get along, so to speak. So, but
yes, and I think some of that demonization continues. I also think it's going to be interesting to watch how things stack out in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod over time, because back in 1988, David Preuss, who was the president of the American Lutheran Church, the ALC, which was one of the more liberal bodies that went into what we now think of today as the ELCA, he happened, ironically enough, to be a first cousin to Jacob Preuss, the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod at that time, and also Robert Preuss, who was the brother of Jacob Preuss and was the president of the Missouri Synod's Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Jacob and Robert Preuss were conservatives in the Missouri Synod. David Preuss and the ALC had more of the ecumenical orientation for obvious reasons. But David Preuss, the more liberal counterpart to his cousins, who was the president of the ALC when it went into the 1988 merger that produced the great Lutheran conglomerate that we've been referring to as the ELCA, Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. David Preuss made the statement in around 1988 or in the aftermath of that merger, that the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod within one generation, he felt, would still join this larger merger of liberal Lutheran churches, that in other words, the forces of ecumenism and liberalism in the Missouri Synod were still a significant enough presence that over time they would work throughout the years, particularly as the aging guard of the old conservative element in the Missouri Synod continued to be removed through the ravages of time, that the world would yet live to see a time when Missouri Synod Lutheranism would come into fellowship with this larger liberal Lutheran body and would join the World and National Council of Churches. So we'll wait to see if that happens. Might be a few years before we know one way or the other on that. But this Missouri Synod Lutheran thing bears watching because some of those tensions from years ago are still there.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect them to merge with Hagee's Church anytime soon or anything like that.
I think we could at least bet on that. And that's an interesting thing because there's a great curiosity, and that is that both the traditional conservative wing of Lutheranism and the liberal ecumenical version of Lutheranism, as the ELCA would represent that, both of those wings of Lutheranism have stood historically against the Zionist movement and against much of what the modern state of Israel has been up to. So that's a fascinating topic because there you see the left and right wings of Lutheranism both being less than enthusiastic about the Zionist enterprise.
Right. And I seem to remember even in the 50s and 60s when I was a youngster and growing up in the 50s going to school that there was articles about they were fighting among themselves back then with the different Lutheran groups with the Missouri Synod. They had different points of view, and there was articles and papers about them and so forth.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, some of these struggles probably overlap with some of the tensions that were going on in the Roman Catholic Church leading up to Vatican II. And I think in American Lutheranism today that you still see these struggles and controversies emerging, not simply in the relationship between the Missouri Synod and the ELCA, but then you have a group of smaller Lutheran synods that are of the more conservative right-wing variety, using those terms simplistically for the sake of description this morning, who have their own theological issues, and that's a phenomenon that continues to be with us as well. But as far as the basic division in American Lutheranism, you're talking about, and again, this is a gross oversimplification, you'll find pastors and churches in these synods that do not reflect the national caricatures that I'm drawing here. But in principle, historically, the Missouri Synod has been the conservative traditionalist group in American Lutheranism. What we now know as the ELCA is the more liberal Porta Center operation.
No, thanks for the information.
Yes, sir. Anything else?
Your guest Friday is the one that's going to be talking about the neocons, you say?
Yes, this is a guy named Dr. Robert Sungenis, S-U-N-G-E-N-I-S, and Dr. Sungenis went to George Washington University and Westminster Theological Seminary and maybe some other schools too, but the Lutheran Christian News, which is an independent conservative Lutheran weekly, this is a gross oversimplification, but I suppose maybe it's the American Free Press of the Lutheran Church. To a point, I think that's a fair comparison. They have been running Dr. Sungenis' article entitled Neocons and the Jewish Connection. The Lutheran Christian News has been impressed enough with this research that it's been running these as a part of a series in the January 29th and February 5th Christian News. And that's how I found Dr. Sungenis and contacted him. He represents a group called Catholics Apologetics International, which you can find at CatholicINTL.com. And, of course, as an Orthodox Roman Catholic, he and I would disagree theologically on some things since I come out of the traditionalist wing of the Lutheran Church. But as far as this Zionist issue is concerned and the Jewish character of the neoconservative movement in America, boy, this is first-rate research as near as I can tell, because he talks about not only the kinds of connections that we see in contemporary neoconservative thought, with the Jewish lobby. But Dr. Sungenis, in these articles that have been reprinted in the Lutheran Christian News, goes into the history of Zionism and the history of Jewish Bolshevism in Russia and other things that are simply considered to be too hot to touch by American corporate media. And he brings names and dates and analysis into this in a way that to me is just absolutely overwhelming in the impressive character of it. And that's why I wanted to get him on the show, because a lot of the things that the guest yesterday either danced around or didn't want to discuss for, I think, some obvious reasons, are things that Sungenis will get into in great detail on Friday.
I would hope he gets into the fact that the neocons was born out of the Trotskyite division of our Jewish brothers, and with William Kristol Sr.
Yes.
And so forth, the modern neocons.
Irving Kristol, one of the names that will crop up in that, and also this guy at the University of Chicago, Leo Strauss. I suspect that name will come up too. We'll be back. This is Mark Dankoff's America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Can you grow your own nutrition on a shelf indoors in 10 days? Wheatgrass juice is live superfood, the richest nutritional liquid known to man, packed with amino acids, living enzymes, and over 100 elements. 2 ounces of juice have the same nutrition as 3 pounds of choice garden produce. Call 1-877-699-4328. That's 1-877-MY-WHEAT. The stamina, healing, blood building, weight control, and cleansing are just the beginnings of what you will reap from pennies worth of grain. For the book, seed, and the beautiful stainless steel hand crank wheatgrass juicer for $150 plus shipping. No monthly pills, no monthly bills. This is real self-sufficiency. Go to AustinWheatgrass.com or call toll-free 1-877-MY-WHEAT. That's 1-877-699-4328. And thank you for your support of our labors and of the RBN Network.
Do you suffer from frequent and severe headaches? Well, you don't have to any longer. Headache Stay Gone is an all-natural headache remedy that is free of all side effects. Headache Stay Gone will cure any headache and prevent it from returning again. Painkillers can offer temporary relief at best, along with a long list of harmful side effects. Headache Stay Gone uses all-natural ingredients and cures your headache, letting you enjoy more time with your family and loved ones. We'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone today and send you the bill. Wait until your headache is cured before you pay for it. That's right, Headache Stay Gone must work for you before you pay for it. Try Headache Stay Gone risk-free by calling 1-800-327-0727 or visit www.headachestaygone.com. Again, that's 1-800-327-0727. And don't forget to ask about your risk-free trial today. Call now. Start living life without the headaches.
Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We will be joined at shortly after 9 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, by Dr. E. Michael Jones of Culture Wars, talking about Cardinal B and the Jews and the whole issue of Vatican II. And I think as you get into this subject that it will be a microcosm of a much larger problem dealing with infiltration, media spin, agents of influence, and some would argue double agents, and the whole way in which this kind of process in world history has led arguably to the present state of affairs in this country in regard to both our foreign policy and our domestic policy, and the total transformation, I would say, of American culture as it relates to the whole issue of the way in which our religious institutions have been infiltrated, along with the news media and the educational institutions as well. And this has led to, again, what I would argue is the current crisis in the American body politic and in the American republic generally, as we are now at a final crossroad, it would seem, in world history. Jim, you still there? Okay. Jim has dropped off. But that's where we're headed with Dr. E. Michael Jones as we go into the next hour of conversation on a series of topics that I think will be of profound influence to everybody concerned. You know, our last caller was talking about the difficulty in getting into the whole question of different kinds of Jews. You know, the Ashkenazic Sephardic controversy. You've got the whole question of Torah Judaism as opposed to Talmudic Judaism, and the extent to which some Jews are more influenced by the former than the latter. Then you get into a series of things that are discussed in Dr. E. Michael Jones' article, which is going to be the basis for our chat in a few minutes, Cardinal B and the Jews. And looking at that whole thing, it's fascinating to see that at several points he mentions the very thing that Jim was talking about in his conversation with me. Looking at Dr. Jones' piece here on page 30 of the July-August 2006 Culture Wars, he mentions that the biggest issue that concerned the Vatican Council Fathers' misunderstanding of who they were dealing with, that was the biggest problem they were having. What kind of Jews were they dealing with in regard to those who were trying to influence various sessions of the Second Vatican Council, particularly the third session? Were the Jews, quote, the people of the Old Testament, unquote? Or were they the source of Hollywood star cults, pansexualism, and Freudian psychoanalysis, and as a result, a danger to Catholic morals? According to Ponsons, quote, the majority of the Council Fathers were under a very serious misapprehension as to what constitutes the very essence of Judaism, unquote, when they approved the November 1964 schema, because they ignored the traditional teachings of the Church and, quote, have only applied themselves to the humanitarian aspect of the problem, skillfully submitted by the spokesman of world Jewry and by a press largely favorable to Jewish interests, unquote. We'll take that up with Dr. E. Michael Jones when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned for Dr. E. Michael Jones, of Culture Wars, and his article on Cardinal B and the Jews. We'll be back.